This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, there's always a global need in third world countries for help in the delivery of adequate healthcare services. One organization, Worldwide Healing Hands, has recently initiated a program in partnership with Upstate Medical University to benefit women's health and education in Sierra Leone in West Africa. Well, here with more on this is Dr. Robert Silverman, professor and chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Upstate Medical University and Krauss Hospital, and the division chief of maternal and fetal medicine as well. Welcome, Dr. Silverman. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So you've, Upstate and you, have initiated a brand new partnership with this Worldwide Healing Hands. Tell us about it.
Well, we're very excited about this partnership. Worldwide Healing Hands, it turns out, is funded and established by one of our graduates from our residency program.
Really?
Who is living in California and has been very involved in global health care, especially in East and West Africa both. And Dr. Donda, who is the physician involved with that, has reached out to Upstate Medical University and the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology to partner with her in addressing a major problem in Sierra Leone.
Tell us about what is the problem and what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, one of the problems is Sierra Leone has the dubious distinction of being one of the most poverty-stricken nations in the world. It's actually the lowest-ranked nation in the world. And what's happened is the maternal mortality rate, deaths related to obstetrical issues, is on the range of 2% of all women.
Wow.
Which, when you think about that, the idea that one out of every 50 women who go to have a baby dies is just...
staggering.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. It really is. So what is the hope? What is this program that you plan to... What's the partnership? What will you be doing?
What we'll be doing is specifically developing a much better obstetrical program for them. Right now, there's one OBGYN for the entire country.
Come on.
And that's it.
That's shocking.
Which is amazing when you think about it. They have a medical school, but what they need is the establishment of a accelerated program in obstetrics to address the issues that are most commonly causing deaths in their country. And those are things like the performance of a cesarean section, the management of hemorrhage, DNC for sepsis, those kinds of things that right now these women just die because of that problem. And so what we want to accomplish is an accelerated training program for some of their medical school graduates in order to begin to train a cadre of physicians that can deal with these problems.
So you would basically be going over training medical students in OBGYN to fulfill those needs.
We're going to take the recent graduates from medical school, and that's exactly what we'll end up doing. We'll create a curriculum so that whether it's physicians from Upstate or part of Doctors Without Borders, whoever ends up going over there to assist them will be able to use a curriculum to train them in all of these different issues.
So basic surgical skills, recognition and treatment of all these common obstetrical issues. And it's how long will this program go on for?
Well, we originally want to accelerate it over the course of a year, but our hope is that we'll be able to identify those people that really have potential and bring that out for another couple of years and fully train them in obstetrics and gynecology.
Do they have the physical infrastructure? I mean, do they have places where all of this can take place in sterile environments? And you know, are there hospitals per se?
It really is a challenge. And they're beginning to develop some of the infrastructure. And I think there's no question that further development is necessary. But this can be done without a lot of technology. In fact, most of these nations, what you end up doing is being very low tech, yet you can have large impact.
And they already probably have some lower level, like midwife type of people also in place that can be trained as well.
That's indeed the case. They have a lot of mid-level, lower level providers within their villages and within certain areas, but they don't have the high level support. And that's where the problems arise.
So who would actually be going? I don't mean specific names of people, but give us an example of...
Well, we would want to use some of the Upstate faculty. We'd also, Helping Hands also has a whole cadre of physicians that they use, and partnerships with Doctors Without Borders, OBGYNs throughout the world.
So it's not just these kinds of procedures, but it's also women's health education that's going to be brought to them as well.
Actually, the education is the biggest part of it. And I think that when you consider that you have a country with one OBGYN for the entire country, there's obviously a huge need for education. And, you know, education not only physicians, but patients, of providers, to even know when to send them so that we can prevent the deaths and tremendous mortalities and morbidities.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with obstetrician-gynecologist Dr. Robert Silverman. We're talking about a new partnership to bring improved women's health services to West Africa. Well, it seems to me like this is a major undertaking. How will you get the, well, will you need equipment, that kind of thing, that you'll be bringing as well?
Well, I think there are some equipment needs, but the overwhelming majority of this is a knowledge base. And having a curriculum that we develop, and I think more of programming than anything else, many of the things that we teach can be done with very low-tech equipment. It doesn't require a lot of very expensive equipment. There certainly are some needs that we have, but most of it is just having people available and a curriculum to teach their physicians how to take care of women.
The sad news right now is that we are in the midst, in West Africa, and specifically in Sierra Leone as well, of a very significant outbreak of Ebola. And in recent weeks, it's been talked about literally spinning out of control. So I understand that for the time being, this program has been postponed.
Understandably, because there's no question that the Ebola crisis is critical and is overshadowing everything that's happening in West Africa.
Yeah, I mean, we're hearing so much about healthcare workers being at risk, but it seems to me that it even more underscores the unstable health systems in Africa's poorest countries.
No question about it. When you're dealing with extreme poverty and you're dealing with people who don't understand the basics of infection and why things like Ebola get spread throughout populations, there's no question that it is a crisis and it's very difficult to contain.
Have you yourself been involved in any of these types of programs before this?
I have not.
Of global health problems.
Yeah, no, I have not. This for me is I think a venture that makes a lot of sense, because certainly I've been invested with teaching through the medical school with both medical students as well as residents in obstetrics and gynecology. And as part of the regional perinatal program, we service 19 different hospitals in upstate New York, over 14 different counties. So this has been very much a emphasis of my career.
It seems to me, as we look at this whole problem in West Africa, though, the need is so great, and your program obviously will potentially fill a need. But do you have some thoughts about how some of, you know, first world countries, so to speak, could be making more of an impact in these countries and preventing something like this Ebola outbreak from ever getting, you know, legs, so to speak?
Well, I think there's a moral obligation that many of us have in education to spread our knowledge throughout the world. Many of us don't know how to do it. We don't have partnerships, but I think there's a need for us to do this. And you know, it's interesting. You take something that has a 2% mortality rate, and even if you cut it by a third, it has such a tremendous outcome change in families and in lives of people. I can't change a 2% mortality rate, but I can certainly impact on it and make a difference. And I think all of us can do that.
So what's going to happen now with the current situation? Obviously, we don't really know how long this Ebola outbreak will continue and if, in fact, it will become epidemic throughout West Africa and beyond.
And that's the concern, is because of the level of poverty, because of the lack of healthcare providers as well as facilities, this has the potential of becoming a larger and larger crisis and going globally.
Do you think that right now, healthcare professionals are somewhat reluctant to do this kind of important work, given what we've been seeing? So many now have been infected. We have lost, I guess, a certain number who have actually died. And I think you were saying people who are Ebola experts in the world, we've lost many of those.
We have. This is a virus that truly has a lot of implications for healthcare providers. And there's no question that practicing medicine in developing countries can potentially be dangerous. But on the other hand, the global impact that we can make and using preventative measures and being careful can help to mitigate a lot of the problems that can occur with educating and being part of a third world nation's healthcare process.
Something as simple as I was reading about the fact that there's suspicion of hospitals in these third world countries to begin with, and thinking that when these diseases spread, that they actually are being spread within a hospital. That's one thing. There has been threats to burn down hospitals during this whole Ebola outbreak. And the whole way, for example, that they treat their dead, and which you can understand the feeling of kind of a ritual washing of the body and all that, but not having any understanding that they are literally, you know, perpetuating the spread of the disease. It's frightening.
It is, and yet that's the problem in many poverty-stricken nations, is a lack of education. And I think, you know, we're always afraid of that which we don't understand. So our job is to make people understand what the problem is in a way that makes sense to them and on a level that they can understand. We have to do that.
It sounds like America is beginning to take the lead, I mean, with the CDC and the government is looking at the fact, I believe, that we'll be sending troops over to build infrastructure, not necessarily to treat individuals with, you know, with regard to Ebola, but specifically to actually build the infrastructure necessary to quarantine and care for patients so that we can possibly limit the spread and also save some people from that.
And I think that's the right direction. There's no doubt in my mind that the biggest problem with many of the developing nations is a lack of infrastructure, and we're good at that. And so helping these nations, not just doing it ourselves, but helping them to develop their infrastructure is something that we can offer to them that can have just a tremendous impact.
So what is your plan going forward at this point without knowing what the future holds? What's the hope? What's the expectation?
Well,
in terms of this program?
Sure. Our hope is that the healthcare crises that are ongoing currently in Sierra Leone will resolve in a fairly rapid fashion. Whether or not that's possible is another story. But in the meantime, we continue to go forward with our planning and development of how we'd like to do the educational processes so that when things have stabilized and we're able to get things going, that we're ready to take off and be running on the program.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. I hope you'll come back and share with us, you know, hopefully it won't be too long in the future, what's transpired and some of your successes is what I hope. My guest has been Dr. Robert Silverman. He's professor and chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Upstate Medical University and the division chief of maternal and fetal medicine. Thanks again for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.